talking about an underlying commission. Fee structure would collapse without. I'm not talking about taking a percentage from an investment.
If the providers were paying you nothing, ever, what would that mean to your fee structure? Could you actually function and support it? If you got nothing from the providers, nothing, could you structure your fee structure from that point onwards? I get nothing from providers. My fee structure stands up. Does yours? If you never got a boon from another provider ever again, in any shape or form, could you survive on your fee structure? Think about it. And if it's uncomfortable, highlight that box.
Well, after 3 years' time.
That could be the case.
With factory gate pricing and all.
Yeah, and it may be zero pricing eventually. So you just need to think about that as a part of your business strategy. Could you do that? What's that got to do? Here's the question. What's that question got to do with client satisfaction? What's having no commissions?
Perceived value of what they're getting from you. If they perceive it as having a high value, then irrespective of commissions or however, they're happy to pay it. If they don't perceive the value, then they won't pay it.
And yes.
So if there's no commission, you won't.
Do everybody get that? Okay, if your business is not providing high perceived value and the providers stop paying you any commissions whatsoever, could your business stack up because the clients will carry on paying it anyway? If I were in business as an IFA today, I would be seriously asking myself that question. And I think it would be inappropriate to attempt to ignore the question. I think that would be a very dangerous business strategy indeed, to simply turn your back on the question. Even if the answer is not what we're expecting, the question is a question that has to be faced. Sorry, Peter. Sorry. So that's what it's got to do with client satisfaction. If your client is not satisfied enough to pay you all of your fees out of their own pocket, then what does that say about the satisfaction level that your business is delivering? It has to be faced.
David, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
It is a line of my own model. At the moment, I charge retainers monthly.
Yes.
Trail income. Those are my two main sources of recurring income.
Yes.
Are you saying that I should be gearing it more towards the retainer concept, where the client pays it out of his own pocket, and taking less ownership of the trail in view of that statement?
I think I'm saying simply, Fred, unless you face up to the question, it doesn't cause you to think hard enough about the quality of your client satisfaction. If you face up to the question, you then have to answer, as Stephen said, you have to answer the question, does that quality of service satisfy my clients enough that even if there were no trail commission, I could still create the same revenue? If you can't face that question, then I think you're running away from something today. 5 years ago, it wouldn't have mattered, but today you're running away from something, and it's an inappropriate business strategy to run away as a business leader from a question that says, do I provide enough service or value for clients to pay me for it? I think it's a really inappropriate business behaviour. Doesn't stack up as a business leader. Stacks up as an IFA, but not as a business leader. And that's what we're trying to create here. So, that's just one of many questions on that page. These are not comfortable questions. Not supposed to be. If you remember my last workshop, I said to you, my job is not to make you feel comfortable. Why not? Why?
Because you won't do anything.
Yeah, you won't change. Why would I leave you feeling comfortable if I'm asking you to change? So, as a team, page 36, you have no more than 5 minutes to come up with a strategy on page 36 of the team, driven by the MD, client satisfaction. The operations director should really get involved here. All right, let's listen to Stuart's operations director first of all. I think Gordon, you're ops director, aren't you? Let's listen. Now we're going to spend a whole workshop on developing the client. Forget about service proposition. We're not proposing anything. We're doing it. Make up your mind. Either you're proposing to do something or get on and do it. We're going to create an experience, a client's experience, that the clients will experience when they're dealing with us. That's regarding our service. And we're going to learn how to align the fees that we're going to charge, the highest possible fees that we can, to that experience. And clearly, the better the experience the client feels and that we create, the better the quality and quantity of the fees. So this is just a one-page test on how you think about that process. We're going to spend a whole day on this. Being brilliant in sales and attracting clients to your business and then giving them a really lousy or mediocre service defines how you're going to earn. So the question is, why is it some financial planners and IFAs can charge retainers of £5,000, £6,000, £7,000, £8,000 a year without any funds under management, and others can't? Something's going on in that business that the clients feel so enamoured with, the experience that they feel when dealing with that business, not just the IFA, that they're prepared to dip into their pocket and pay £5,000, £8,000 or more regularly each year. Why is that? Something's going on. Let's see how well you've got that understanding. Okay, Gordon.
We thought first of all that we would present to any prospective clients our ideal client profile.
Right.
Our service proposition and our fee structure.
So how exactly does that filter people out?
Well, if we said in our ideal client profile that we were looking for academics over the age of 50, if they weren't over the age of 50,
okay,
then that would take them out. If they didn't have £250,000 worth of investable assets,
right,
then that would filter them out.
Very good.
And if our fee structure was a minimum of £5,000 per annum,
yes,
then if they didn't feel happy writing that cheque for that amount, then that would also filter them out.
Okay, good. So you now have on board clients that you desire, because everybody else you've filtered out, and we've alienated our non-clients. Now, how do you start to manage what's going on in their head about what to expect with you? How do you do that?
We have a written client service level agreement.
Right.
Clearly defining what it is that we do and how we do that.
Right. Who currently has a copy of the 12
principles?
12, what do I call it? The 12
principles.
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking of criteria. 12 principles of good financial. Is it great financial planning or good? I wrote this thing. I can't remember what it's called now. The 12 principles of good financial planning. Who has a copy of that? You should all receive a copy of that. If you don't, please email me. It's called The 12 Principles of Good Financial Planning.
When was that issued, David?
About a month ago. But if you haven't got it, let me know. 12 Principles of Good Financial Planning. And it was definitely in one of the marketing workshops in December or March. So in one of the marketing workbooks. The 12 Principles of Good Financial Planning. And what it does is it never mentions investment. Why do you think I did that?
Doesn't mention what?
Doesn't mention investment.
Because
Why do you think
putting her tits up, and you don't want that to be a yardstick?
So you'll give me that again. technical
if
term?
If you mention, if you mention investment or investment success or whatever, that's out with your control. So then you open yourself up to criticism that you're not actually meeting your standards and what you're actually doing for the client.
Right. So you might desire to make investment part of the judgment of you in your business. You may desire that. If you want to judge us and make a judgment on our experience and how we work with you and then pay us appropriately, then we're all about investment. Might be your decision for your business. But an interesting word that Stephen used, it is out with your control. Now, if you're a stockbroker, that's what you do. If you're a fund manager, that's what you do. If you're a day trader, that's what you do. But I have to say, you're going to have to make up your mind in this business about what you are and what you're not. And we decided in our financial planning business at Gerard that the stockbroking part of Gerard was about that. And we definitely were not. We were financial planners. And therefore, our principles of financial planning never mentioned investment performance because it was not in our control. We have no control over the stock market. I'm not having a client judge me on something over which I have no control. And therefore, we built the experience around all the other things that a good financial planner really should be doing. And they judged us on that. So that Richard is aware of this. Conversation I had with Nicola where she told me about a client conversation, Nicola Downs down in Surrey, where the client at the beginning of the session phoned up and said, well, what they all say to us, and she said quite bluntly, quite bravely, well, what's it matter to you what the market's just done 30% drop? What's it got to do with you? Client was, what do you mean? It's my money. And then Nicola took out the 12-point sheet, got the client to do the same. Can we read through this together over the phone? And would you help me understand, are we on track to achieve the life goals that you employ or you hired me to help you achieve? The life purposes and aspirations. Are we on track from our last annual review meeting? Are we getting there? The client said, yes. So do you sleep okay at night when you're on track? Well, yeah, we're getting there, aren't we? Where I want to be is where we're getting. So what are you phoning me for? Was the underlying very clear message. She'd move the goalpost. You might want to think about that as a client experience. Carry on. Sorry, Gordon.
Do you want me to go to the next?
Okay.
How do we ensure they're delivering exactly what they want?
Sorry, are you getting this? Do you just want to repeat that, Gordon?
Yeah, it was just the next section. How do you ensure you're delivering exactly what they want?
And right.
Using effectiveness systems, oblique client surveys.
Okay. All right, do you want to give me an example of that, or not quite got there yet?
Sorry?
It's in the next bit.
Well, we suggest in the next section that we would incentivise clients to return surveys to us on a monthly basis. So we'd send out a survey and either by email, by SurveyMonkey or whatever,
right,
to ask them to give us feedback on the service that we've been providing them.
That's interesting. Who here does client surveys during the course of a year? Yeah. How do you structure them? Because the questions are the most important part of the survey, obviously. How do you structure the questions? How do you decide what the question should be?
If there's any information that you want from the client, so
yeah,
you can structure the questions to affirm.
Yeah, and that's the natural reaction. I guess my cynical view on that, and I'm being purposely cynical for the case of this conversation, was what happens, Andy, when we get up there and do role plays? And the answers and the questions are so skewed because we're all financial planners. that they're not the question, they're not answers to the questions that were asked. And we've seen that two or three times in the role plays. Somebody's asked to be a client and somebody's asked to be a financial planner. And the financial planner asks the client a question and the client answers like what? Like a financial planner. And the financial planner says, that's not quite what I asked you. What I asked you was, and the financial planner sits there going, trying to think like a client, I don't understand what you mean. Okay, it's a real struggle getting outside of your myelinated head. And so the challenge I would have with your own questions might be, we may not be that good at asking the right questions. I would strongly advise you to consider and talk to people like Advisor Impact, actually a competitor of mine. But I think they're so good at what they do regarding seriously thought out, carefully researched, tried by the thousand across Canada and the USA questions for IFA clients. They've been at this business for about 10 years. This is their profession. This is what they do brilliantly. And what they pull out of the clients would not be what you pull out of the clients. They would ask a whole series of different questions in ways that you don't do, because that's their skill. I'm not on commission. You know, they're a competitor. Use them for surveys. Won't cost you a fortune. What you'll get will probably shock you and might actually upset you.
David, what are we trying to get out of this return of the survey?
Well, exactly. What are we trying to get out of it? We're trying to get out of it is, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my business? What are you not telling me in meetings? Because I'm not asking you the right questions. Right. How do you really feel about me rather than what I think you feel about me? Because I'm seeing you through a certain pair of eyes and my eyes are skewed. Let me give you an example of that. I often use this at IFP meetings. I think that State Street is a big investment group in the States. And the Boston area, pretty much of New England, invited in a company called Knowledge Wharton, I think it is. Knowledge Wharton, who are a research group from the local university, who specialised in the financial services arena, this particular research group. And they did surveys on hundreds of State Street's clients. Now, if you work for State Street, you're probably pretty good at what you do. You're a seriously experienced and qualified investment advisor. The survey, and all of its questions on different subjects, pointed out to the senior partners of State Street that the advisors were so far distant from their clients' answers that it was scary. These were advisors that had been in business for years, had very wealthy clients and dealt with them quite intimately. Every single question, if you look at a spectrum of the possible answer 0 to 10, the advisors were at one end about how the clients feel about how we do this, that and the other, and the clients were at the other end. And it was a big survey, quite a complex survey, so they had to work quite hard at it. It frightened the pants off the partners at State Street. And here's what they asked themselves. If we're doing so well and we're not delivering what the client wants, what might happen if we started delivering what the client really wants from us? That's scary. And it's scary for you too. So my view on that, Fred, might be you might consider not thinking through your eyes, not seeing the world through your eyes, but seeing the world and your clients through a separate pair of eyes that would look at it quite differently to you. You might not like the answers that you get, but they would teach you how to change. Yeah, Peter.
How do you phrase questions so that your customer isn't prompted to go somewhere else?
That's a really good question. My honest answer is I haven't a clue. But what happens at Advisor Impact, and why they've been in business for so long on this survey area for about 10 years, is that they managed to so word the questions that the client becomes more engaged with the advisor, not less. there then continues a dialogue, and the advisor knows exactly what to go back to the client to ask further and dig deeper on. It points out vulnerable areas of the relationship and says you really need to ask the following things about the client. So the client, the advisor picks up the report, which gets back very quickly, and then knows what next to ask the client, and they find that their revenue and the relationship increases and deepens. And that's why they continue paying that kind of money to Advisor Impact. Have a chat with Advisor Impact and see how it works. Arthur.
You should be aware that you check your PI insurers before you send out any questionnaire.
Yeah. They might not like it.
They might not send it.
Yeah. And that's the danger of sending out your own, unless you check with PI. You might actually negate your PI cover. Good.
So you wouldn't generally have them anonymous, these questionnaires, to encourage more honest response?
Well, when you, that's a good question actually, Andy. When they find Advisor Impact that when a third party does it on behalf of, the response is far more honest. And the survey doesn't have to be personalised. The client can answer anonymously to Advisor Impact. Right. And they just dig deeper than we do, because they know what they're doing. We're just guessing it. We're asking the questions we like them to answer. Well, that's not the name of the game at all. So they're very skilled at it. I would have a chat with them and ask for some referrals, some client referrals, and check them out. What was the result of this survey to this IFA? Find out. I wouldn't make it up yourself, really. We're not that good at that. That's not our skill set.